We're holding on top Gimel on the base, about two dots. We'll actually have Kesef, but the middle will be on this. We learned so far, we discussed yesterday about when an Eved, if Kanani is freed of Kesef, who has to provide the Kesef? The mayor has said that somebody else has to provide it because the Eved himself has no kinyan of his own. The Chacham said it could be Aydei Atmoy. We talked about Shtar, whether it can be Aydei Atmoy or Aydei Achirim. So the Chacham say that the Kesef can be Al Yidei Atmer, that he himself is giving the kesef to the other, or will vant via kesef mishal acherim, however, provided that the money was supplied by somebody else. So, name of Bahal Kamifagi. So does that mean, should we say that that's the underlying machlokus between the mayor and the chachamim is on that point? The mayor sava ein kinyan la'eved v'lo da'avo, that the mayor says that an eved has no capability of being kohen to anything without his master. So automatically, anything that he is, any money that he would be kohenah, immediately goes to his master. Therefore, he wouldn't be able to use it to free himself with. Therefore, necessarily, not only acherim have to provide the money, but they're the ones who actually give it to the master. Is the point?
Directly.
Yes. And by the way, in kinyan leisha below baila, and also Rav Meir would be saying that a woman is not able to be kohenah anything independent of her husband. Why are we mentioning this over here? Tosfos and various other Rishonim talk about Rashi. Rashi talks about that. Rashi starts by saying that really we're not. It's not really so relevant to our sugya over here. But incidentally, while we're clarifying what Rav Meir holds about these kinds of things, then we mention that as well. Really, we're focusing on the Eved and the other over here, not specifically. You know, it is true. Rashi says the same machlokas they have by an Eved, they have by an Isha. But the only reason we're mentioning it over here is just because we want to. Once we mention one, then we're mentioning the other for completeness' sake. Tosfos has a long discussion about that. Maybe they're not quite identical. Maybe we could say that an Eved doesn't have the capability of being kohen to anything independent of his master, but an Isha does have the ability to be kohen to something independent of her husband. Yeah, we'll talk about it as we go through the Sovyei. Anyway.
We made already a comparison yesterday between the Eved and the Isha.
We made a comparison as far as receiving a gift. Would they actually be said, though, that no, a woman has a yad of her own,
right,
where an Eved doesn't? Okay. Anyway, so maybe the mayor then holds that an Eved is not able to be kohen anything independent of his master. Therefore, somebody else has to be providing the money and actually giving it to the master. Then kinyan leisha b'lo baila. Whereas v'rabbanan sabri yesh kinyan le'eved b'lo da'avo yesh kinyan leisha b'lo baila. Whereas the chachamim would hold that he does have that ability, and therefore, yes, somebody else has to be providing the money because where did he get it? But he himself can be the one who actually gives it to the master to free himself. Amar Rav Sheshet, no. So Rav Sheshet says no. Dekulei Amar Ein Kinyan LeEved V'lo Da'avo Ve'Ein Kinyan LeIsha V'lo Baila. No. We could say that everybody agrees. Amar Rabba, Amar Rav Sheshet actually. No, that's not the point of their machlokas. That's not the point of their machlokas. Everybody would agree that an Eved can't acquire anything independent of his master, and a wife can't acquire anything independent of her husband. V'hoch Maya Skinen. But what we're talking about in our mission is the Achne LeAcher Moneh. Suppose the case is somebody else was makna him some money, a money, let's say 100 dinar. Well, Amalei, and he says to him, when he's giving it to him, Amanas she'en l'rab ha'rushus boi. I'm giving this to you on condition that your master has no rights over it. Now, does that work or not? Rav Meir Savar. No, the difference would be the ordinary case. What we were talking ein kinyan yesh kinyan or ein kinyan leevid v'lo rabo would be talking about just somebody gave him money without any strings attached. Let's say, is he kohenah it or not?
Right.
Now we're talking about somebody gave it to him specifically on condition that your master has no rights to it. Well, does such a condition work? Rav Meir figures like this: ki omalei koni. Koni Eved, as soon as he tells him, you be koneh this, then immediately, okay, the Eved is koneh, but automatically the koneh rabbi, immediately his master is koneh, because anything that an Eved is koneh, his master automatically is koneh. So then when he adds amanas, then it doesn't work. Amanas, that your master doesn't have any rights over it, that doesn't work. Now, why shouldn't it work? Some Mepharshim talk about that the reason is because it would amount to being masna mashakos of a Torah. We learned about a number of times that if you make a t'nai against what the Torah says, it's not chal. Here we would say that the Torah is what declares that an Eved has no ability to have any kinyan of his own. Therefore, if you're giving him a mona and saying, I'm a nas, that your master has no ability over it, then that doesn't work. Now, We did talk about that Rabbi Yehuda says that v'dabashu moment tnoi chayim, that if you make a tnai to contradict something that the Torah says in a monetary thing, it would work, but Rabbi Meir doesn't hold that. So therefore, that would be one reason why Rabbi Meir would say that it doesn't work. That's one reason.
It doesn't work anyway.
It doesn't work any time that you're making a tnai that contradicts what the Torah says, regardless whether it's v'dabashu moment or not. That's one explanation, and then the Tosfos Rosh gives a different answer. The Rosh gives a different answer, and in his Tosfos, he says that the problem is over here not that it's a Tanai that goes against the Torah. The problem is that the Tanai contradicts the actual giving. Giving him implies you giving something to an Eved implies automatically his master has rights to it, because Kol Mashakon Eved Konan Abed.
Right.
Then you're saying on condition your master doesn't have any rights to it, that contradicts the giving. Therefore, the mayor says it doesn't work. Where's the Rabbanan say no? Given no, if you say Amanah, such a Tanai does work. If we say it's Masna Mashakas Matorah, then fine. Either you could argue it's not, because the Torah is not imposing the law that an Eved doesn't have a right to Kinyanim of his own. It's a factual thing, basically, but therefore you can make a Tanai against it. Or if we say that it's a matter of that self-contradictory, then it's not, because they're saying that maybe an Eved does have the ability to be claimed of something independently. Whatever. So therefore they say such a Tanai work.
How can you make a Tanai on something that doesn't belong to you?
What do you mean? You're giving this money to the Eved. I'm saying, on condition, that I'm giving it to you on condition that your master has no rights to it. I have the ability to make on the face of it, according to the Chachamim anyway, I have the ability to make such a Tanai. It's my money. I'm giving it to you on a certain Tanai. That's the point. Rabbi Meir is saying that the problem is by the time you get to the Tanai, the money's already been given and the master has already been claimed. The Rabbanan don't agree with that. The Rabbanan hold that the giving is contingent on the Tanai. No Tanai, no giving. Well, then fine. Then the Tanai can be in effect. It's in effect, yeah. Hey, that's Rav Sheshet's answer. Your Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Elazar gives a different explanation. Actually, no, Rav Elazar says, if you made a Tanai like that, everybody would agree, both the Rav Meir and the Chachamim, that such a Tanai is ineffective, and therefore the master will have acquired the money before you ever set Amanah.
Invalid. Yeah, it's not
effective. It's not an effective Tanai, right? The Chacham, Mayach Kinnan, rather, Rabbi Elazar says, we are talking a similar case, but the Tanai is a little bit different. You're in the Akne le'achem mona, somebody else is makna a mona to the slave, and he says to him, Amanas shetetziv elecheves. He doesn't just say, Amanas, that your master has no right to it. He actually says, I'm giving it to you, Amanas, that you use it to free yourself with. Meaning, in other words, therefore, it's only being given for that purpose. Therefore, the mayor Sava, so the mayor again holds Kiyomale Koni when he says to him, be Koine. At that point, Koni Eved be Koine Rabbi. The Eved has been Koine immediately, the Odin is Koine. So, or an Eved is Koine, his master is Koine. But Kiyomale Amanath le Klum Komale. Again, this Amanath doesn't work just as it doesn't in the previous case.
Even if he says before he actually gave it to him.
Yeah.
Before he gave it to him, the Eved still belongs to the master.
Well, but he's saying be koine it almanach that such and such. It doesn't even if he said almanach before he actually gave it to him. Fine, then the Kenyan's not a Kenyan, because according to the mayor, you have no way of overriding the fact that whatever an Eved is koine, his master is koine. Whereas with Rabbanan, Sabri would be day nami holo to maknele. After all, the Rabbanan say this is a different kind of Tanai. The fact is, you weren't really makne to the Eved either. Because you specifically said that you're only doing it on condition that you use it for your chayrus. Therefore, exactly. In other words, you have a catch-22 over here, basically. If you were to say that the Eved is koinet, and automatically, therefore, the master is koinet, it's not going to be able to be used for chayrus. And the slave himself only has the right to use it. If you were to use it for something else, if he were to use it for something else, it wouldn't be valid.
If he is koinet, it's already as if he was freed.
That's the point. The only thing he can use it for is chayrus. Therefore, the Rabbanan say, such a tnai is effective. That prevent it, because even when you gave it to begin with, it's not given in a way that the master should acquire it, because the whole point of it is to free him.
But that, when you're saying al tnai, that you free him, does that have to be with the das of the adam?
No, not necessarily, because again, if the maybe not. I mean, if the Odin were to disagree and say, I don't want to free you for the I don't want to take this kesef, no, then it would mean that the money has to be returned, because then it can't be used for his chayrus.
It has to be done with the consent of the
Odin. The pashas would have to be done with the consent of the Odin, yeah.
Yeah.
If you do that model, you get it from other threads.
So actually, that's another explanation also. The reason why this works is because another explanation among the Rishonim is the reason why this works is because when you're giving it to him, Amanas Shetetzibay L'Cheirus, it's pretty much the equivalent of, yes, Yad Eved to Yad Rabbah. The Eved has no Yad of his own. It's effectively the equivalent of you, the third party, of giving it to the other, and I'm giving you this mana on condition that you free your slave. And such a Tanai, obviously, is valid. So therefore, that works. You are, it's true, but okay, there are cases where you can override it for one reason or another, for Tvah Mitzvah, as we learned about, in Gittin or whatever. No, Tavi actually never was freed. Tavi remained an Eved his whole life. Actually, the Gemara in Baba Kama. That was Rebbe Eliezer's slave. The Gemara doesn't say his name. But no, actually, the Gemara tells us in Bava Kama, which is related to the next thing we're going to learn about soon, about Shen Va'ayin, the Gemara tells us in Bava Kama that one time Rabbi Gamliel accidentally knocked out one Aver of Tavi's, and then he was very happy. Look, you know, now I have an excuse to free him. After all, he's such a Talmud Chacham, and they told him, no good, Moed B'Knas Potter. You need Moed B'Knas, if you admit to something which is a Knas, and we're going to discuss in the Gemara the whole matter of Shen Va'ayin as a Knas, then it doesn't work. You need Aden to come to Beis Din and say that it happened.
With that line of reasoning, we are the Hashem. Someone comes to us, a goy comes to us and says, you know what, I'll give you the money so that, you know, for your cheres. You're not going to be Avi Hashem.
We're not going to accept it. No, I mean, besides, it has to be what we just said. It has to be with the Rotten of the Oven. So the Gemara says, based on the way we're explaining this so far, the two possibilities of what we have, how Rav Meir and the Chachamim are disagreeing on this matter in the Mishnah, who's actually giving the kesef, or if we say that whether we said that Rav Meir holds that an Eved or an Isha have no ability to make a kinyan on their own, and the Chachamim say they do, or whether we say ordinarily they don't, but you can make it for Tanai, we can find a contradiction then between two dinim of Rav Meir and two dinim of the Rabbanim. Between the mayor in our Mishnah and the mayor in a Braisa that we're going to quote, and the Chachamim, Titania, as we learn in the Braisa, Ein isha poda maita sheni boi chomish. Now we know when you have maita sheni, this was in those of us who learned Shloisha Parakim of Ramban. This was the topic of Shloisha Parakim in the last day or two was Pidyon maita sheni. The din is usually when you have maita sheni and then you can't take it to your shalayim for one reason or another, so you exchange it for cash, you're supposed to add 1/5, actually 1/4 really. You add 25% to the amount that it's worth, and then you take that money to your shalayim and exchange it for food and eat it over there. No, it's not a knas. It's not a knas. I mean, the Rambam writes that a general reason behind the chomish thing is basically so you don't think, well, you know, it's only hektish anyway. I'm going to undervalue it. If you want to make sure that it's valued properly. So, ultimately, it's there's a cost. There's a number of different aspects and a number of different things involving hektish where you have to add an extra 25%. This is one of them. Anyway. A woman, when she redeems Meister Sheni, she needs to add the fifth. Now, at this point in the discussion, we start out by assuming that where does this Meister Sheni come from? It comes from a field that belongs to her husband. Which, in that case, we would consider it as though she's sort of like a partial owner as well. Now, the rule is, you only have to give the
owns her goods.
She owns her group, but we're not getting into that. We're talking about the field. If we assume at this point that the Maisa Sheni comes from a field that belongs to her husband, and we would assume, therefore, that she sort of has a certain partial ownership over it as well, Ishtik Gufa, basically, then Shehi Kabaila, Rashi says she's the equivalent of her husband in this regard. The din is you only add the fifth for Maisa Sheni if you're redeeming your own Maisa Sheni. If I have Maisa Sheni and I ask you to redeem it, you don't have to add the fifth. So therefore, that's what we're saying over here. The Tanakama in this Braita says that a woman does have to add a fifth, presumably when she's being poed to her husband, Maisa Sheni. Reb Shimon Elazar, Omer Reb Shimon Meir, Isha poed to Maisa Sheni below Chomish. And Reb Shimon Elazar tells us in the name of Reb Meir that she doesn't have to add the fifth. Because it's not considered hers.
You could, technically.
The Menachem Malog we're going to talk about soon, wait. So hechidami. So what are we talking about? Ilema bezuzi debal or meiser debal. Are we talking about that both the actual meiser comes from the husband's field and the money that you're using for the pidyon also comes from the husband? In that case, why would we then why should we say that then why would Reb Meir be saying you don't have to have the chomesh? Shlichus debal ka'abda. She's just doing it as a shliach. If you have somebody else be part of your meiser sheni, not officially as a shliach. But like you say you give him your ma'aser sheni, you go ahead and redeem it for yourself if you want to, then you don't have to add a fifth. If I appoint a shliach, go be part of my ma'aser sheni, then sure, shliach and shluchah shalom kamoitzeh, and you gotta add the fifth. The el of the zuzid yido ma'aser didei. So then are we talking about maybe that the money belongs to her and the ma'aser and the money that she's using for the redemption belongs to her, it came from Nichsa Malog, let's say, and the ma'aser comes from his field. In that case, then on the contrary, definitely she shouldn't have to do the fifth, even according to the Tanakh, because ish amar rachman v'lo isha, because the pasuk says in goel yigal ish ni ma'aser, right? And the word ish is extra, so we darshin from it that it means only a man, not a woman, has to add the fifth. Then Meshach Chochma gives a reason why Taka should there be a patur for a woman to not give a fifth. He says, because what's the whole idea of being part of Ma'aser Sheni? You're supposed to take the cash to Yerushalayim and exchange it for food and eat it over there. A woman, practically speaking, she has household responsibilities, she has the children and whatever, she may not be able to get there so easily. So therefore, the Torah wants to make it a little easier for her. Fine, she has to be part of Ma'aser Sheni in order to be able to eat it, just like anybody else. Don't make her add the extra fifth, where then she's going to end up with an even larger quantity of money that has to be taken to Yerushalayim and spent there on food. Anyway. Tosfos, by the way, discusses a little bit the girsa that we have over here, zuzi dido, ma'aser didei, that we're asking, are we talking about a case where it's her money and his ma'aser, is Rashi's girsa. Tosfos discusses that no, the actual girsa should be that maybe are we talking about it's her money and her ma'aser. But then again, the answer, because if Tosfos points out, if it was his ma'aser and her money, you don't need the ish versus isha thing. Anyway, if you're being quoted as somebody else's ma'aser, you don't have the fifth. But if we assume that the Havamina of the Gemara is that it's talking about her ma'aser and her money, then somebody else's thing doesn't work. Then you need the fact that she's a woman and the Torah and there's a cause of patters her from the fifth.
And now you can give the mic to someone else, they should go send the money to your
ma'aser. Well, there is that, yeah. You can send the money with somebody else to your shalayim, yeah. Actually, I don't remember the source, but I think one of the Mefoshim said that the idea behind this whole concept of Ma'aser Sheni and Pidyon and taking it to Yerushalayim and all that is that your average farmer is going to end up every year with quite a bit of Ma'aser Sheni. There's only so much that you can eat when you take a trip to Yerushalayim, the Sholosh Regalim or whatever. Necessarily, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to have some member of your family stay in Yerushalayim, learn there in Yeshiva, and you'll supply him. He'll eat Ma'aser Sheni food while he's there. And that way, the Torah arranges that a person is likely to have at least one career Talmud Chacham in the family who sits and learns in Yerushalayim.
Oh, that's a close on storm, okay.
Yeah. We don't have a Bitsa Mikdash nowadays. We don't need Ma'aser Sheni anymore. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Elo Lavki Hai Gavna. So we must necessarily say, by elimination, that the only the case we're talking about, where we're saying that we have this machlokes, where the Tanakh says she needs to add the fifth, and Reb Meir says that not, must be the Akmi Lo Achamana. Somebody else was makna her some money. And he says to her, I'm giving you this mana on condition that you use it to be part of your meiser. So what would have come out? It would come out then that Abanan are saying that as soon as he tells her, here's the money, her husband acquires it. The almanach doesn't work. Therefore, it's the husband's meiser, the husband's money, therefore the fifth. Whereas her mayor would be saying that she herself is koinet, and isha merachmona v'lo isha, she doesn't have to pay the chomish because she's a woman. Therefore, so it would come out that it's a contradiction, yeah. The Ibcha Shemaynalu. So it comes out then, they're saying the exact opposite of the way we're understanding them in the Mishnah. Amar Abaye Epoch. So Abaye says, you're right. Then what you have to do is you have to flip around the opinions in the Braisa. Reb Meir is the one who says she doesn't need to pay the Chomish. The Chachamim say she does, and therefore they're matching up with what they say in our Mishnah.
Flip.
Rava Amar La'olam Lo Tepuch. Rava says you don't have to flip them. I can find a way to reconcile it. V'chach b'maisa d'ofma b'nosh askinim. You were assuming all this time that this maisa came from the husband's field, from the husband's produce. No, don't assume that. Let's assume, rather, that the maisa we're talking about came from her father. Her father had maisa sheni, but he hadn't had a chance to be poda yet. He passed away. She inherited his nechassim. Well, in other words, she didn't. You know, we're talking about a case evidently. No, it doesn't matter whether she's married or not. She's an only daughter, or she had only sisters, whatever. So all the girls yaushin. And one of the things she yaushin is this ma'aser sheni. That's the question. Is it considered nichsim lug? Usually, anything she yaushin becomes nichsim lug, as we learned in Ksubas. You'll have to sell it and use the money to buy karka, which she'll own the karka. The husband will get the payers. How does that work over here? So Rav Meir goes according to his own shita. He says we're going to have a detailed sugya about this later on in the sechta in another month or so. That Rav Meir holds that Meiser Sheni is basically mamon hektish. It basically belongs to the Eivishter. The Torah tells you, instead of it goes to the Kohenim or gets offered on the Mizeach or what have you, you take it to your Shalayim or you exchange it for cash and take the cash to your Shalayim. But basically, it's Mamon Hektish. Therefore, Lekhani Leibal. Therefore, it's not really her Yerusha. Therefore, the husband's not Kohenim. So therefore...
Meaning that if it was not... Something was hectic.
If it was not hectic, then it would. Then the mayor would hold. The mayor would hold that as soon as she's koneh, her husband's koneh. Knew that's exactly what he said in the Mishnah. That mash koneh shukan tavayla. The rabbanon of Tanaya, whereas the rabbanon go according to their shita, the ami mamon hedyot. They say that ma'aser sheni is basically not hektish, it's basically mamon hedyot, except that the Torah imposes on you the requirement to take it to your shalayim, etc. Therefore. The kani lebal. Therefore, the usual rule of nixim malug applies. The husband is going to acquire it. Hilkosh lichos lebal ka'avda. Therefore, now when she's redeeming it, when she's exchanging it for cash, she's doing it on shlichos of her husband. Well, her husband would have to give the chumash. So does she. So therefore, the two opinions in the Braisa don't contradict. They don't contradict our Mishnah. It's rather meiser is a separate. Meiser is a separate situation.
So
according to the mayor, she's potter because she was never coined, because her husband was never coined anyway. It's her meister, therefore. Or not even really hers, it's mom and hekmish, but her husband never was coined because the mayor's rule that mashkantiyashakantabayla does not apply when the thing is hekmish, right?
But then it's her father's.
But it was her father.
If you do something to your father, someone else...
No, her father passed away. I mean,
right, but if you do...
If her father himself had been coined, yeah, he would have had to add the fifth. Now that she inherited it from him, and it's mom and hektish anyway, it's not really her inheritance per se, then we say ish v'lo isha, and she doesn't have to add the chaymish. Whereas if it belongs to her, and through her it belongs to her husband, then when she is poydeh, then she's doing it on behalf of her husband. And her husband would have to give the fifth, therefore so does she.
It wouldn't look like she's asked, but he's asking the shliach to go do it.
No, we said a shliach, you do. We said if you actually ask a shliach to do it, you do. If you, for example, you give the maaser to somebody, and you say, go ahead, you know, and the guy's poded on his own, then he doesn't have to add a chaymish. You have cases, that Amman talks about, you can have a case, for example, where two people have maaser sheni, and let's say they exchange it, and then each one is poded for himself. You don't have to add the fifth, because each one is being poded, the other guy's maaser. Not if you officially, neither of them have to give a chaymish.
How are you poded,
you're poided without the chaymish. You're poided by you. It's a trick, basically. But yeah, in that case, then the fruit's worth $100. All you need to set aside is $100, not $125. One of the Rishonim, I think the Ashba points out a Svara over here also in connection with Ma'aser Sheni. Usually the rule is with Nichsim Malug that you lock up then Karka Vore Choperis. You have to use the money to buy Karka and then the Peris go to the husband. In this case, Ma'aser Sheni, you can't really, the food itself is supposed to be eaten or the cash value of it is supposed to be taken to your Shalayim and eaten. The Keren itself is meant to be used up. It's not meant to be used to buy things like fields and whatnot. Therefore, that goes into part of why Rav Meir is saying that you can't consider it regular nixim alug. Because it's not the kind of thing that could be used to buy a keren which will produce payers. The keren itself is supposed to be eaten.
A real nixim alug
would be when there's a keren that will continue to exist, which she will own and the husband will have payers from.
That would be a field or a tree.
Yeah. Exactly. For an Eved or any kind of asset. Tana. Now we learn in a Braisa, besides for all the methods that we talked about thus far, the Mishnah had said that an Eved Knani goes out free with Kesef or with Shtar, we have a third method. Tana. Yotze v'shen v'ayin v'rosh evarim shen chozrin. A slave also goes free if his eye or his tooth is knocked out, or any of the tips of any organs. We're going to learn tomorrow the whole list, but we'll learn tomorrow on the whole list. She'enim chozim, which do, only the tips of limbs which don't regenerate.
Which limbs regenerate?
We're going to talk about soon, for example. A baby tooth regenerates, a permanent tooth grows in instead. Fingernails, let's say, regenerate. But,
Not a limb.
So that's what we mean. That anything she'enim chozim, anything which doesn't regenerate. So the Gemara says, "Bishlam Shen V'Ayin Ksivi." Okay, I understand why he goes free with Shen V'Ayin. It actually says so in the pasuk that if his master knocks out his Shen or his Ayin, then he goes free. El Roshei Bominolam. Where do we know the same thing applies to the tips of the various other limbs, the fingers, the toes? Well, now I say we'll have the whole list tomorrow. The answer is Jumya, the Shen V'Ayin. What we do is we use. At this point, we're figuring we're doing a Mamatzinu, Binyanav, because of that, for the Mishnei Ksovim. Anything similar to Shen V'Ayin. And just like the loss of a tooth or the loss of an eye is something which is it's openly visible. We're not talking about something internal to the body, and it's something which doesn't regenerate. And the same thing would apply to any other mum which is visible externally and doesn't regenerate. Question is, by that logic, why don't we say that since the Torah could have just mentioned one, it could have just said Shen or it could have said Ayin, the fact that it says both is two psukim that are coming to teach us two psukim back to back the same din. When you have two, we have a general rule throughout Shas, that when you have two psukim that come to teach you the exact same din, it means it's limited to only those. Because if you only had one pasuk, then it would mean you do a binyanav from that. Once you have two psukim that teach us the exact same din, then it means only those, nothing else. Otherwise, if we had just said it in one, we would...
Binyanav is
or mamatzinu, it's two names for the same thing. The Torah tells us a din in a certain case, and we, by analogy, apply it to other cases in Torah as well. So if it only says it in one pasuk, fine. But once it says it in two psukim, and here you have two separate psukim, one says that if the master knocks out the eye, and one that if he knocks out the tooth, then he has to set him free in return for that. So that's two psukim that teach us the exact same thing about two different limbs. L'chora, if it said the eye, we could have equally well figured an eye is something visible and doesn't regenerate, and therefore would deduce from that a tooth and anything else. Same thing if it said only a tooth. The fact that it says only those two should mean only an eye, only a tooth, nothing else. We shouldn't use that binyanav. The answer is tzricha. No, because in fact we do need tzukim about both of them. You can't derive one from the other. The ikas of Achmana Shen, because if the pasuk had only written the case of the tooth, habamina, then you would think afilu shen becholav. Then you would think that applies even a milk tooth, even a baby tooth. You have a child edit. If the master knocks out one of his baby teeth, you would think, if the pasuk only said Shen, you would think it means that he goes free also.
Shen,
you would think, means the tooth. Because, kasa rachmana ayin, and therefore instead, the pasuk writes also an eye to teach us, an eye doesn't regenerate, it doesn't grow back. Therefore, the kind of tooth that we're talking about that would get him free is also the kind, has to also be the kind that doesn't grow back, similar to an eye. The e kasa rachmana ayin, and if the Torah only wrote an eye, have I min my ayin shenivra imay afkol shenivra imay, then you would think the other way around. Maybe it only works with an eye because he's originally born with eyes. Avo shen loy, but teeth, a person's not born with teeth originally. Maybe, therefore, he wouldn't go free because of a tooth. So, therefore, we actually need both of them because each one teaches us a different practice in it.
The second part, the first part, you need a shen. Otherwise, you would have thought just a baby tooth.
No, not just. We would have thought even a baby tooth. A tooth is a tooth.
Right.
So, yeah. But like this, we learn by mentioning ayin that no, it means only adult teeth. Okay. Before we go further, by the way, I forgot to mention Tosfos mentioned at the bottom of Omer Aleph, the Mishnah had only mentioned Kesef and Shtar. Why didn't the Mishnah mention this whole business of Rosh Eivarim, which when we need a Braith to tell us? So Tosfos himself said the reason is because we're going to discuss the question soon of whether when the master knocks out the eye or the tooth or one of the Rosh HaYavarim or whatever, is it automatically the slave goes free at that point, or does he still need to write him a get shichur? The Tana of our Mishnah might hold that he still has to write a get shichur. In that case, it's included in Shach. There's different other approaches that Rishonim take, including one of them is, given that we're going to have that machloekas soon, whether you need a shtar or not, the Tana didn't want to get into that. The Tana just wanted to mention things where we know everybody agrees that you can do kesef. Okay, we disagreed on the precise mechanism of kesef, the precise mechanism of shtar, but everybody agreed that those work, that each of those works independently, whereas Shen Ba'ayin, we're going to say soon, there's a machloekas. Or also that in the Mishnah we wanted to focus on which ones need to be Adei Atmei, Adei Echerim, Shen Ba'ayin, none of that is relevant. Anyway. Okay, so Gemara says, the Ema, now, okay, so what do we say? So you're saying, fine, we need both Shein and Ayin, and therefore we should be able to make a Binyan Av from them. But who says we have a Binyan Av over here? The Ema, maybe we should use a different Midah, a different one of the Yodul Midahs. The Ema, Ki Yaket Klal, maybe say when the Torah starts out, and each of these took in, when the master knocks, is a Klal, which would mean any limb, any organ. Shen v'ayin prat, then it mentions specifically Shen v'ayin as a prat. Okay, so we said we need both pratim to know the details, but still, it's only a klal of prat. Ein b'chlal elamash of a prat. In that case, the rule is the klal is meant to include only what's in the prat, and actually we learned it means only Shen v'ayin and midrach v'yaloy, only Shen v'ayin, nothing else. And in fact, we talk about in Nazir, if that's what the Torah means, why does it need the klal at the beginning anyway, if it's only limited to the prat? We said, because fakir, by putting the klal there before the prat, the Torah wants to make it clear, limit it only to the prat. Don't use a mamlatzinu, don't use a binyanav to deduce other things from it. So if we learn that way, yeah, you're arguing you want to do a mamlatzinu, but klal of prat opposes that and prevents that from happening. If we only had the prat, if the Torah had only said the words Shein and Ayin, then you could deduce other Evarim from it also. But we're arguing at this point, by putting a klal before it, the Torah seems to be saying, don't try to make any mamatino, don't try to make any binyan out from this. Limit it only to the things that it said, Shein v'Ayin, nothing else.
How come did I have the klal?
What would be with
that?
No. He's asking. I mean, if we're saying the word ki yake or the klal, then how else could the Torah have phrased it that we would think it wouldn't be a klal? Shen. I don't know what could it say. I don't know. So you don't put anything before it. Let's say you say Shen. You know, Shen avde yafil or whatever. You know, Shen ein avde, whatever the lashon is over there. Chiyake ishet ein avde yude ein avde yake lachafshi shasanu or something to that effect. You know, didn't have to start out by saying chiyake. The answer is, you're right, but actually you have another klal there at the end, because the pasuk continues that he has to send him free. Which Rashi points out what the alternate lashon could have been, that instead the Torah could have just written chopshi hu, or yeti lachopshi lachopshi yishalchenu, he has to send him free, implies that there's many other cases that you have to send him free for. So then that's a klal again. In that case, kala prata klal, and we know, eyapadon elokena prat, in that case, then it means that it's not only limited to the prat, and the klal now includes anything similar to the prat. Therefore, again, ma prat before it's mokshu begolei v'ayinim chorizim, once we establish that the prat, the shen v'ayin, are things that are visible and don't grow back, I've called mokshu begolei v'ayinim chorizim, so the same thing we would say to the two klalim on the two sides of it, come to add anything else that's similar to that.
Now
you can add what?
Yeah, also.
Well, now we don't need a mamatzino anymore. Now we have klal prat the klal, which is a deal. The difference is a mamatzino is we could include anything else that's even vaguely similar to it. Klal prat the klal means it has to at least have some fairly specific similarity to it. Yes. It depends for what purpose. No, it's a good point actually, because in Bechorus, when it talks about over there about the movement of animals and movement of people, there's movement that prevent a Kohen from serving the Bismuth, there's movement that prevent an animal from being brought to the Kohen. It talks over there about technically a Kohen loses his teeth. He's not actually considered a Balhom. Midrabbanan, he's possible. 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 Midrabbanan, he's possible.
from.
Well, there is that, but there's also so the definition of a mum for this purpose seems to be different than the definition of a mum relative to Kohenim. Really, the law of Shen ought not to be considered a mum at all. People commonly lose their teeth when they get older. Sometimes even all of them. But in the case of an Eved, there is a custom that it is considered a mum. I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago a work from the Yalf Shimoni that says the reason behind it, how did the whole concept of Avdus begin anyway, is from the fact that the Chum goes, Vayar Chum of Iknan, he sees Noach's degradation, and goes and then tattles to his brothers until they go and cover Noach. So what happened? He uses I to see what he shouldn't be seeing, and he uses Shen, his teeth, to talk about it to his brothers. Therefore, so that's where the whole concept of being an Eved comes from in the first place. Oro Knan, Eved Avodim Yalechav. When an Eved gets his eye or his tooth knocked out, sort of like he's made up for that. He's gotten his punishment thereby. Therefore now he can go through it. Without teeth, it's really hard to pronounce a lot of letters. Okay, so Gemara asks, "E ma pshatim furish mumen shvegali or bottom umlachta ve'enechoyzer." Well, if that's the case, then let's go further. Let's consider the prat shen ve'ayin. There's more than that. Besides the fact that it's visible, there's another detail. Besides the fact that it's visible and it doesn't grow back, there's another detail. The bottom umlachta ve'enechoyzer. It's also something where now it makes the thing is no longer functional. The eye can't see anymore. The tooth can't be used for chewing anymore. So you should argue then that the same thing should apply. Only a mum that has all three of those, that has all three of those factors, should be considered a mum that gets him free. Alama Tanya, in that case, why do we learn in a Braisa that no, Tolosh Vizkana, the Dilda by Etzim, that if the master grabs a hold of the slave's beard and yanks, and by doing that, he dislocates his jaw. Eved yotze behem lacheres. Then the slave goes free for that. Lachora, that's not bottom of the lachta. Because it is the goal. It's visible that now he has a broken or dislocated jaw. You can still eat. You can eat with difficulty. Okay. You know what? The Rambam actually learns this sugya a little bit differently than we're learning it over here. He learns it more like what you're saying. That if you dislocate his jaw, you're preventing now the teeth that are attached to that jaw no longer function.
Right. Six or four to eat.
Yeah, because he can be eating while he's working. I don't know.
I mean, he was taking he can't
deliver
the amount of the malacha.
It takes more time. Okay, I mean, he can eat while he's doing malachas. I don't know. Bottom of malacha anyway doesn't mean that now he's able to do less malacha. It means the function of that organ is now destroyed. The eye can't see anymore. The tooth can't chew anymore. On the pshat as we have the Gemara over here is that it's true it's true that the dislocated jaw is something visible. It's true that it is enichoizer, it's not going to regenerate, because Rashi says that eventually it's going to fall off. But on the face of it, at this point, Rashi says there's no bitul malacha. The Rambam who holds that it is considered bottom malacha, I think the Kesef Mishnah says the Rambam might argue that it's not considered mumim shibagoli, because the jawbone is covered by skin. You can see that the person has a dislocation, but you can't see the actual mum. You sort of see like the effect of it, kind of. Right?
There's that too,
yeah. Okay.
But when you say in your
chazer,
you can still relocate it in the right.
It depends how dislocated it got, I guess. I mean, we're talking about that. In a chazer may also mean that it won't regenerate on its own.
Nothing to regenerate.
Okay, it won't go back. So anyway, that's why Rashi says the sefer livash filippo, that eventually, because it was dislocated, it's eventually going to dry up and fall off.
It's not treated.
That's what we're talking about.
Reduced.
Okay. Anyway, so then, where are you getting? So where are you getting that from? Lachora, you need bottom of malachta. The answer is lachofshi yishachenu ribuyahu. Let's do it differently. We were assuming up until now that we have the chiyake, shen v'ayin, and lachofshi yishachenu is a klal u'prat u'klal. Instead, let's assume that it's a ribui miut ribui, which, as we talked about the other day, a ribui miut ribui is a broader thing. There we had a machlokes with the Rebbe and Rabbi Yisrael Yehuda in the case of piercing the ear, which one you use, klal prata klal or ribui miut ribui. In this case, the Gemara is saying, let's rather assume that everybody would say that it's ribui miut ribui. Now, ribui miut ribui is instead of klal prata klal. The difference is, as we talked about the other day, is klal prata klal means you have to find a set of things that match what the prat is. You find what the prat, we find what all the various details that the prat has in common, and then you say anything else that has those characteristics also is included. Anything else is excluded. Ribui miut ribui is almost the other way around. It's basically we include everything. We only exclude something that's completely dissimilar from the miut. So if we go that way, then if we go and say that it's a ribui, then you can include things like a dislocated jaw. According to Rashi, it's not bottom of the lachter, or according to the Rambam, maybe according to the Kesef Mishnah and his understanding of the Rambam, it's not shabagolui. Okay, but ribui miut ribui includes if it has anything in common with the prat of shen v'ayin, with the miut of shen v'ayin. So therefore, it does. It has at least one of those things in common. Out of the three things, if we say klal prata klal, we would say that it has to have three things in common, because there's three things that shen v'ayin have in common. It's begolui, it's visible, it's bottom of the lachter, the thing will no longer function, and it's ein echozer, it doesn't grow back. If you use klal prata klal, anything else has to have all three of those characteristics, as opposed to a dislocated jaw is missing one of them. But if you say ribui miut ribui, all you need is it has to have one of those characteristics. In that case, you want to ask the ribui yahu. So if you're going to say ribui miut ribui, even he call all yoder with some for the sake of laughter, then wouldn't it apply also? Even let's say he hit him on his hand and it dried up temporarily, but it is eventually going to heal and then go back to normal. By that logic, because after all, it is begolui, even though it's not any choizer, because it will regenerate. You should say that doesn't work. That works according to that would set him free. Alama Tanya, so why do we learn in a Braitha he call yod but some sort of surface after in Evid Yosef Alakhiras? So why does the Braitha say that in that case that you won't go free? The answer is Imken, Shen Ryan, Mayani, right? Fine, but after all, even if you're gonna use ribui miut ribui, the fact that the Torah mentioned Shen and Ayin, it means that the miut has to be useful for something. It has to tell us, therefore, that you have to at least have it has to have a little more in common with Shen V'ayin than just the fact that they're begolui. It has to also have then that it's ein echozer, whereas in this case it will be chozer. It dried up temporarily, but it will. So ribui miut ribui still means okay. It may not have to have all three things in common. It may not have to 100%, but at least it has to have more than just a little bit. Otherwise, the turtle wouldn't have had to mention Shen and Ayin. We learn in a Braisa, the Kulam Eved Yosef Ben Lecherus with Tzarech Get Shechru, Divrei Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon says that with all of these things, not only Shen V'ayin, but any of the other 24 Evarim that we're going to talk about tomorrow, any of them, the slave goes free. However, with Tzarech Get Shechru, he still needs a Get Shechru to make him mutter to marry a Bat Yisrael. There's two aspects to an Eved's freedom. We learned about this in Gittin. There's the fact that he has to work for his master, and there's the fact that he's also to marry a Bat Yisrael.
Right.
According to Reb Shimon, once the Shen V'ayin or whatever it is was knocked out, he's free in the sense he no longer has to work for his master, but he's still considered an Eved in the sense that he's also in a Bat Yisrael. To make that official, he needs a Get Shechru. Not really. A little bit, but not really. I mean, he is an Eved certain days. Here he's not an Eved. Here he's not an Eved as far as Abdus at all, but he's still an Eved as far as Yuchsin. No, but it's a different kind of thing. And Chatzibin is still an Eved as far as Abdus and as far as Yuchsin, just for only one day at a time. Here he's completely out of an Eved as far as Abdus, but yeah. Dibirib Shimon. Rameyo says he doesn't need a Get Shechru. And more Tanoim who got into this, Rav Elazar Omer Tzorich, Rav Tarfon Omer Enit Tzorich, Rav Akiva Omer Tzorich, Amachriim Lifnei Chachamim Omrim, the Talmidim who would sit in front of the Chachamim and try to reconcile the opinions. Rashi himself doesn't mention over here, and then in Gittin he says he doesn't know who they are. And here he doesn't say anything, but there are other Mepharshim who explain. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that tells us that there were a number of Talmidim who were regulars in front of all these Chachamim, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Shimon HaTimni, a couple of others. They might be these Machrim Lefnei Chachamim. Anyway. They say, Oyrim, Nirin Divrei Ptarchin Meshen Ba'ayin, it seems more logical to go according to the Ptarchin, that you don't need a get shichur, in the case of specifically Shen Ba'ayin, Sha'at Torah Zichzaloi, because the Torah explicitly gives him the schus to go free with those. The Divrei Rabbi Akiva, the Sha'at Ebarim, whereas it makes more sense to say, according to Rabbi Akiva, when it comes to the other organs, the other 24, Ho'lo Knas Chachamimu, because after all, the whole thing is a Knas of the Chachamim.
As opposed to the two
that explicitly says in the Torah. So what do you mean? Knasu. What do you mean? It's a drasha from a pasuk. That can't be considered as something just from the Chachamim. Midrash Chachamim. No, rather what we mean, it's not a knas that the Chachamim imposed, but rather it's a midrash Chachamim. It's something that the Chachamim darshened. So that's what's the difference? Why should something the Chachamim darshened be any weaker than what it says in the Torah? So Tosfos says that actually, even Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon and the rest of them who are saying you need to get shichur is really not minat Torah. It's only midrash banan. Why? Because if it's only midrash chachamim, what happens is not everybody is familiar with it. People can be assumed to be familiar with psukim. So shen ba'ayin, everybody knows. People don't necessarily realize that, let's say, the loss of a fingertip or an earlobe or whatever the various ones that we're going to talk about tomorrow would get him free. So what's going to happen if you don't write a get shichur? Technically, he'd be free minat Torah completely, as far as Avdus and as far as Yuchsin. The problem is, what happens if the master, that's what Yuchsin means, that he can marry Bas Yisrael? What would happen? The master will meet him on the street one day. Hey, you're my Eved. What are you doing out here free? So in order to prevent that kind of lies that people are going to think he's an Eved and can't marry Bas Yisrael, make him write him a get shichur. Then.
He doesn't have a chazaka after, let's say, a week. Free?
Maybe not. I mean, the fact is, if he wasn't officially freed, if he wasn't officially
everywhere.
Maybe not. I mean, okay, you know, let him go walk about for a week or two, you know, whatever. You know, the point still remains that you don't want him to say abdiata and make people start questioning whether he's allowed to marry Bat Yisrael and what the status of his children or anything like that. Then Tosfos gives another answer also that the difference is. Shen v'ayin, where it explicitly says in the pasuk "lachofshi shalchenu," implies as soon as that happens, he's automatically chofshi, he's automatically free. The other one, since only learning it from the ribui of the word yishalchenu, well, yishalchenu implies that he's a get, just like by get isha. The chasav l'asev v'krus is the shulchan medesei. Therefore, that's why Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon and so forth would be saying you need to get shechur in those cases. My time is at Rav Shimon, so what's Rav Shimon's reason? Exactly that. Yalef shiluach, shiluach me'isha. He makes a gzeder shava of the word shiluach from a woman. Ma'isha b'shtar, afevednami b'shtar. Now he holds this is across the board. Rav Shimon does not make that distinction between shen v'ayin and anything else. He's saying across the board, even shen v'ayin, you need to get shifur. Because all of them, the Torah includes in the word yishalchen. V'rav Meir, where Rav Meir and the other Tanoim would answer to that, if the Torah said, Yishachenu lachofshi, then you're right. It would mean that how does it become chofshi with Yishachenu, with a get?
But it says it first.
But it says it first, right. Since it says the other way around, to freedom, he should send him, meaning, means he's immediately free as soon as it happens. And again, according to the mayor, this would apply to all the Evarim, not just Shen V'ayin, but all of them. But still, where there's a drasha to be made, we still make it. In this case, the Torah could have equally well said, Yishachenu lachof, here, lachof, Yishachenu, yeah.
You give a get, just a
receipt. Well, that's according to Rabbeinu Tam in Tosfos, that you're doing it, so he doesn't say abdiata. But again, according to the Riva in Tosfos, Rav Shimon, who says that you need to get shichur in all the cases, and the machri and lifnei chachamim who say that you need it in the other cases, would say that you need it mitzad adin, not just as a takana d'rabbanan. Who the halacha is like, by the way, is a bit controversial among the Rishonim. Some of them paskin like Rav Akiva on the grounds that usually the halacha is like Rav Akiva against his chaverim. Some of them paskin instead I don't remember if anybody passed like Reb Tarfon. For the Machriim, one problem with that is that usually The Gemara mentioned the rule in a few places, Ein hachra shlishis machras. A third party hachra is not really considered a valid hachra because the difference is, let's say, for example, what are they saying? There's a difference between Shen V'ayin and Shari Varim. Let's say, for example, Reb Shimon or Reb Akiva or whoever had said, whether it's Shen V'ayin or whether it's any of the 24, he needs to get Shichur. And Reb Meir and Reb Taufan and so forth have said, whether it's Shen V'ayin, whether it's anything else, he doesn't need to get Shichur. Then what we would say is each of them recognizes there is a logical reason, maybe, to distinguish between Shen V'ayin and everything else. However, each of them feels, for whatever reason, that's not a distinction that should be made. Then the Achra can be that, you know what, we should make that distinction. If they didn't even mention that distinction themselves, then it means that has nothing to do with what they hold. So therefore, the Machrim is like a third opinion. Why should we pass him any more like a third opinion than like anybody else?
They should have mentioned it.
They should have said whether it's Shen V'ayin, whether it's anything else, then yes. So whether it's Shen V'ayin, whether it's Shen V'ayin, then no.
If they had mentioned it, then there would be no reason for the others to disagree with that.
No, because they could say Reb Shimon might be saying that I don't care whether it's Shen V'ayin, which are explicit in the pasuk, or whether it's anything else that's not explicit. Regardless, you need to get Shichur. So then we could say, okay, he holds that and knows that regardless you need to get Shichur. We, Machriim, can argue there is a logical reason to differentiate between them. And after all, you, Reb Shimon, yourself, admit that there could have been a logical reason to differentiate between them. You just don't hold of it. And the same thing with Reb Meir. If they didn't even mention it at all, then it's not relevant. Then it's a third-party opinion, and there's no... But with that said, there's different other explanations in a few places in Shas when it uses this expression, Ein achrosh lishis machras. There's other explanations. Reb Chananel, for example, has a different explanation. What achrosh lishis means, he says it means the third generation. In that case, then it's not. It's the second generation. There's a Talmidim. Maybe the halacha can be like them. And indeed, there are Rishonim who pass him like the Machrim, that there is that distinction. I don't remember who says what, but yeah. Suppose that now the master hits his eved on his eye, directly on his eye, the sima, and he blinded his eye. So he hit him on the ear and made him deaf. And the slave goes free with that, even though the actual eye or the ear is still there, but it's non-functional anymore. But let's say he hits him opposite his eye, so like he bangs on the wall in front of his eye, the eneroya, and then at that point he doesn't see because like he got so startled that psychologically or whatever, it damaged his vision.
Next to his eye?
Next to it, like on the wall or something, yeah. Or connected osnev enoshimeya, or near his ear, and therefore he doesn't hear enev and yetzibam l'cheres, and he doesn't go free with that because it wasn't a direct thing.
Even if it's permanent?
Well, Omer of Shaman Rav Ashi, remember the Kol Olav Kol Mu. So you're telling me that a sound is not considered of any significance in halacha? V'atani Rami Bayechezkel, but we know in Bava Kama, Braita, that Rami Bayechezkel teaches, if a chicken puts its head into a glass container, the tokabar, and he starts making noise in there, kukurikuri, yeah. The shomer, and he breaks it. Meshalim nezek shalim, and the owner of the chicken has to pay nezek shalim. Actually, the details we'll get to.
For the glass.
Yeah, actually.
For the chicken.
No, we're talking about the chicken can damage the glass. Which actually, okay, when we get to Bava Kama in a few months, we'll learn it's actually not so simple. What we're dealing with a situation where there's grain in there, so it's stuck its head in there in order to eat the grain. And then otherwise it would be considered not a normal kind of damage, and it would be only chassi nezek. Let's not get into that right now. Anyway, and the Omer of Yosef Amri Bei Rav, and Rav Yosef says that they say in the yeshiva of Rav, if a horse neighs, the chamosh near, or donkey brays, each of them makes noise, the shavru kelim b'secha bayis, and with the noise that they made, they broke dishes, there was a high-pitched noise, and it broke dishes, mesham chassi nezek, and they say chassi nezek. Okay, here we have nezek shalom versus chassi nezek, because there are two different opinions in the Gemara about what's called nezek tsroris, with the indirect damage, kind of, whether you do nezek shalom or chassi nezek. Again, we'll get to that when we get to Bava Kama later. Anyway, so you see that damage caused by sound waves is considered a real damage. Why don't we say that over here? Shiny autumn is different in the case of a person to give him the bardas, who, since he's a bardas, effectively you can say he scared himself. Like he should have been able to control himself. Okay, there's a loud bang in front of him. Doesn't mean that he has to then go blind or deaf because of it.
How can you control yourself?
you can, a person can control their reactions to a certain extent. And also, I think the Yad Ramah says that what we mean is also he could have moved away a little bit when he sees the blow coming, move away a little bit so he doesn't get the full force of it. Kidatanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Hamavis es chaveira, if somebody scares somebody else and causes him to get injured by it, potter medine adam, that means potter in a human based in, they can't assess him for any damages because it wasn't a direct thing. V'chaya medine shemayim, but he is liable according to Hashem's judgment, because after all he caused the person damage.
Say a guy falls from a heart attack.
That's possibly the same. What does it mean? Let's say he yelled into his ear and made him deaf. Potter, then he's potter because the guy could have moved away. But if he grabbed a hold of him and then yelled in his ear and made him deaf, then chayim. So then the guy couldn't have pulled away because he's being held by his ear. So the same thing over here, there's a difference between the master actually banging him in the eye or the ear versus banging on the wall or whatever near him.
He can avoid.
As long as he can avoid it, basically.
What's the point of suspending a chayav b'dinei shamayim? They're not giving him judgments. Is it a matter of just tshuva?
It's a matter of doing tshuva, yeah. And it's a matter of doing tshuva, and it's a matter of that if he wants to be yotzei b'dinei shamayim, then he will pay the guy, and he will pay the guy for the damages. Okay, in this case, before we should deal with the question, would chayav b'dinei shamayim mean that he actually has to go and free the slave to be yotzei b'dinei shamayim, or maybe with a slave it's different. But yeah, there is a basic concept. Chayav b'dinei shamayim in general means that if you want to do proper tshuva, you're going to pay the guy for the damages and ask him the chila and so forth, regardless, even though technically the Beis Din can't convict you on it. Yeah. No, in the case of the Eved, I was talking about in the case of the Eved, would it mean, if we're saying chayav b'dinei shamayim, would you be chayav b'dinei shamayim to free him, even though maybe b'dinei adam you wouldn't?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, that's a bit of a discussion about that.
Chayavim b'dinei shamayim, are we?
Who?
We, b'nei adam.
Regular people, of course, can be chayav b'dinei shamayim.
So why are we saying it's patur except for b'dinei shamayim?
Patur b'dinei adam, chayav b'dinei shamayim. This is a general concept. It comes up a number of places, in Bava Kamma in particular, that you can have somebody committed damage where a base sin cannot make them pay for it, but if the person themselves wants to do a proper tshuva, and not be punished by the Eibishter for it, then he will take care to pay for it. Yeah, that's fine. We'll find the Chafayim and Beis is short. We'll be able to catch up easily enough.